Inside Lacrosse from Lacrosse Podcast. I am Kyle Devitt, the senior analyst at Inside Lacrosse, and I am joined once again by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside Lacrosse freelance contributor and pro lacrosse analyst.
Yes, pro lacrosse is back. We're writing things. I'm not sure we're happy per se, but we are healthy, and that's something to be thankful for. And we're also thankful for all of you for A, demanding this, and B, listening to it right now. Chris, do you have any thoughts on the last few months?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just echoing what you just said, thank you, listeners, for, you know, getting at us all the time in the mentions and saying, you know, when is this coming back? Is this coming back? Because without your asking and stuff like that, then, you know, we don't know. Maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't have. So you guys definitely helped pull this together. Last few months, I mean, where do you even start, you know? Just ups and downs and roller coaster rides, and college season gets interrupted. Everybody has to try to rebound from that. Everybody's got to try and, you know, reassess their priorities, figure out ways to stay safe. You know, sports are always in our minds, but also kind of on the back burner from all the other things that have been going on. And, you know, kind of trying to balance those situations and, you know, some people with success and others with a little less success. But yeah, man, it's just the thing I've said often is it's just been a lot. The whole thing's been a lot.
I would 1,000,000% echo that. And, you know, also just like I'm going to say on a personal level, like one of the things that I've learned, especially in the last couple weeks, is to shut up and listen to people, to kind of connect to the Black Lives Matter movement, which I think is important and is a part of all of our cultures now, and we all have something to contribute to it. And this podcast is in no way a way to get away from that. Like, we're going to talk about it. It's not political. It's something we care about, you know? So going to have a mention of that here. And obviously just, you know, like I said, if you're like me, shut up, listen, learn from the people around you, you know, and learn what you can do to be an ally and not just post a black screen on your social media, you know, like actually do something. Any follow up on that?
Yeah, you know, I'll definitely follow up on that by saying one thing I noticed during this period is we have gotten a lot of additional voices in the game. You know, I think a lot of people have felt definitely not pressure, I'd say more inspired to, you know, step up and kind of say, hey, you know, I do have a voice. I haven't used it, you know, or, you know, I have a voice. Maybe I haven't been comfortable using it. And, you know, like the spotlight's been a lot brighter. And I just, you know, a lot of people have, whether it's posting on, you know, Twitter, you know, like putting some stuff on their notes app and, you know, putting that on Twitter, or, you know, sending it into a magazine or a website or something like that. We've really heard a lot of stories now, which is something we hadn't gotten in the past. And I don't think, honestly, the market had been there for listening to that kind of story in the past. But we've heard a lot of experiences, people from kind of all over the country saying what it was like growing up here, growing up there. You know, we've really gotten to learn a lot more about some players and just personal experiences.
Yeah, I think it's important to highlight that. I mean, you wrote a great piece up on Inside Lacrosse right now still, so go check that out. Jules Henningberg wrote a great piece. Trevor Baptiste's piece was very affecting. I think, and that's on, it's not even on Inside Lacrosse. That's on Lacrosse Magazine. And that's, you know, cross promotion of things that matter is something that matters. Like, there's no sides as far as I'm concerned, like, at this point. Like, lacrosse has to, like, figure a lot of things out. And if you think otherwise, like, you're in the bubble. Like, pop it. Figure it out. But speaking about things that people have asked from us as well, people have asked us to differentiate our coverage of the MLL and the PLL for 2020. And while I'm not sure that's the best thing to do, I do think it was inevitable, especially when at the point we're recording this, we don't know what for sure what the MLL is going to do this summer. So I'm here to tell you, and Chris is also here to tell you, that you're listening to the PLL version of the Pro Lacrosse Podcast. Please say that three times fast and you'll see where we're going. But it actually will be easier for us to plan and game plan and get ready for and watch games together. And, you know, hopefully they don't overlap, because then we'll go nuts like we did last year and no one wants that. But as of right now, we're doing two different things, and this is the PLL thing. So we're going to talk maybe a little bit about MLL stuff, but only insofar as it affects PLL. We also want to stress, you know, nothing is certain to happen in terms of these, both of these tournaments. You know, risk is still risk. And all it takes is one person in either tournament to test positive for COVID-19 prior to or during the tournament to throw kind of things into a little bit of a tailspin. And I feel like everyone is ignoring this fact. And I think at first I thought it was just like blind optimism, but now I see it as like reckless and having a little too much faith. And I think that's actually dangerous. And I know every person is doing their best to be safe. And so are both organizations. Like, this is no shots at anyone. This is just a fact of a pervasive, infectious disease. But to take anything for granted at this stage is, you know, just in my opinion, this is me speaking, I think it's irresponsible. Do you have a take on that?
Yeah, I could not agree more. I think it is, it sure feels like this is being largely ignored by a large group of individuals. Obviously, a lot of people are doing the right things. You know, they're following all the safety guidelines, you know, wearing the masks, doing this, doing that. But man, you know, you look somewhere and you're just like, boy, people are acting like they don't care. And like you said, it's going to take one person and, you know, knock on wood or whatever, that everybody's fine. Everybody shows up to camp and the games in, you know, perfect shape, ready to go. If something, we do have to kind of appreciate this sort of moment and this sort of, you know, the situation that the league has prepared here. Because it is something that can be taken away instantly. So, you know, I think what I'm kind of approaching it for is we just have to jump in and embrace it and, you know, dive straight into the pool and hope it's good and, you know, hope we can have a great season. It might go away. So, you know, they say just kind of, you know, live it all like it might go away.
Well, let's attack it from the other angle, right? PLL 2020, it gets announced. What was your initial reaction to the tournament being announced? Not the little stuff along the way, like it's going to be in Utah, it's going to be, you know, 22-man run, none of that stuff. Just like your initial first reaction to there's going to be PLL this summer. What did you think?
My thought was, we have to be happy with anything we get. You know, there is not as much pressure as there is from people like ourselves and from, you know, corporate sponsors and things like that. You don't have that kind of, you know, nationwide or universal pressure as, say, an NFL or you know, college football. This isn't like a factory driving millions of jobs throughout, you know, millions of cities or whatever. So I definitely was looking at the situation like, oh, you know, maybe there won't be pro lacrosse this summer. You know, maybe they'll just kind of fold it all up and say, let's try again. So when I heard, you know, that we're going to have this 3-week tournament isolated all in one spot, we're not going to travel, you know, it's going to be very different, but this is what we can put together. I was just like, okay, great. If you can put something together, that sounds good to me. Like I said, you just got to be happy with anything we can really get. You know, having everybody in one place, they're trying to minimize the risk. You know, I like all those aspects. And I also think having one kind of isolated thing that's a lot shorter than the season, you know, the games are kind of all in order. It's not so much, you know, a couple this week, a couple next week. I feel like it almost gives it sort of a festival vibe. You know, it's more of an event than a full season.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with all those points. I mean, I was happy because it meant I had a job and also something to write about in the summer. But at the same time, I was immediately skeptical of it because at the day it was announced, a member of my extended family was fighting COVID. And I saw with my own eyes what it can do to people and how it affects the people around them. And I didn't want anyone to do anything because I didn't want anyone to like feel that level of pain. And it was paralyzing, you know. I think Like we were talking about earlier, that's gone away for a little bit, but for some people, it's gone away completely. And I just don't think that's safe or smart. So I hope that, and my hope is that everything goes great. Like, no one wants this to go better than Chris and I. Like, I don't want to speak for you, man, but I'm pretty sure we both want this to be amazing, right?
Very much so, absolutely.
Yeah, we want everything to be amazing. We're not rooting against anyone. I love when people like come at me with that. It's like, I just want great games, man. I want great games and I want great stories and I want like players to act like great people or be great people. Not even just act like it, actually be great people. And most of them are. So we're already winning on that front. But we also had a bunch of MLL players that made the jump to the PLL in the entry, what's being called the entry draft. Chris, out of this 2-round draft, which player do you think has the best chance to succeed in the PLL this summer?
I'm going to say Zach Currier. A little bit nervous to say that because it seemed like it'd be too easy, him being, that kind of, the number one pick. But, I mean, he's also the number one pick for a reason. And I think just the reason why I have to pick him over, obviously, like, I guess Rob Pinnell would be a good guess as well. It's just the PLL game seems custom fitted for Currier. We know him to stay on the field. We know him to not be afraid of, dropping back and playing defense, or pushing transition. He can do pretty much everything. So that kind of, you're gonna shorten the ends a little bit and, kind of reward somebody who stays on. We've seen a lot of people kind of go to the next level in their game, kind of reach, not only performance, but kind of stardom just because they can, stay on the field. These sort of transition guys are really getting some shine in the PLL format. So it seems something that he's really going to shine in. And Pinnell, we're not quite sure what he's going to do. I'm not going to be so weird as to say, oh yeah, maybe he'll suck or something like that. I'm sure he's going to be just fine. But, his sort of X style that we've seen all these years is not something that as many teams really felt like leaning on in the PLL game, probably also because of the shortened ends of the field. And then you also have to kind of see where he's going to fit his style with his teammate style. We're not really sure if he's going to do a little more deferring in those sort of situations. I'm curious to see how he's going to balance with somebody like Eric Law, who we have seen doing some of his best work right around the crease and also driving from X. They're going to have to figure that out themselves. So while they work on that, I still think that Curry is going to be just, flying up and down the field, destroying everybody.
I was actually talking with Patrick McCune about this earlier this week. What do you think the over-under for Pinnell's points, just in the group stages? Like 4 games, Rob Pinnell starting an attack for the Atlas. What is he putting up at the end of 4 games? What's the stat line?
Man, so I mean, just based on nothing, I think they're going to want to try to see how the offense can go running with him as a pure, X leader. So I'm gonna guess there's some good games in there for him where he finishes with like 3-2 or something like that. But I'm also gonna say there's a learning curve sort of thing, figuring out in the new teammates and the new sort of dimensions. So maybe he has one game where it's 0-2. So if I said 4 games, let's go 13. I'm setting the over under.
Oh wow, that's low. That's low. I thought we would be at like 20, but also like with 10 turnovers. Like that was like my stat line. Like I don't
Interesting.
even know what's assists or goals. I think it's just flat out 20 points, 10 turnovers. You take what you can get, and he produced. That's a great, by the way. That's great production. That's 5 points a game. Like that's great. I think a lot of the games are 2 and 3, or 0 and 4, and then he has a big game where he scores 3 goals. Like that's the great thing about Pinnell too. It's great and not great at the same time because like if he's on, he's putting up 5, 6 points, and you're not gonna stop him. And also the PLL is gonna have more touches. Like he's gonna get more touches. They're gonna be shorter. So that's gonna be the biggest difference. And whether or not he can adapt to that, I think he can. I think the defenders by and large in the crop he's playing against, the kind of defenders and the defenses he's going to play against are much more compact. So I think some of his, you know, his run to the 5-on-5 and kind of like back foot power move, I don't know if that's going to be as successful. I think he'll have success with it, but I think that also like that skip that comes out of that he throws sometimes, that lever pass, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's there now, because there's going to be the other guy. The third guy in the PLL is way better than the third guy in the MLL. And that, I will say that that's like the, as far as defense goes, like the third guy in the PLL is in a lot of cases, and we've seen it from the guys that came over, the number three guy in the MLL. So, or the number one guy in the MLL. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. I think Courier is the best answer. Like that team is literally and figuratively already his. He's going to be taking the clipboard. He's going to be grabbing water for goalies. He's going to move the nets out before the game starts. Like that's what leaders do. That's what he does. That's what he's going to do. He's also definitely going to get into a fight, and I can't wait. So that's going to be fun. But my pick is actually also from the Water Dogs from the second round, and it's Rylan Reese. He is very, very good. He's big. He's tough. Checks like a demon, and he can shoot twos. This guy is Team Canada's starting LSM. For everyone in the back, Chris, who was the starting LSM before Rylan Reese for Team Canada?
I think he had the same number, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. That's Brody freaking Merrill, okay? Reese is awesome, and I really hope the Water Dogs do not make him play low, because I could see them doing it because he's got the size and he's got the power. But it'll drive me crazy because I've seen what he can do in the pro game for the Cannons last season and also during his collegiate career. I mean, just let him run free. Let him just like have fun in a field of destruction. Let him lay waste. Like, I can't wait to see him play in what is essentially a faster format. And I think he's actually going to thrive in that. I think that's going to be awesome to watch. What did we make of the actual college draft, because it was wild. you get the first shot. It didn't go great. Let's be real. It didn't go great.
No. The PLL is kind of in a spot right now where I almost feel like the drafts are unnecessary. You know, like they need to have them because they need to keep these guys coming to their league, but they don't necessarily need these guys in their league right now. You know, after just 1 year, they've gone through all this sort of, not trouble, but they've gone through the effort of marketing these guys that they had last year. And you know, there's no more room. You get one more team, bunch of guys just getting pushed off. So it's not like they need a ton of new guys coming along. So I think they were fine the way that they went. You know, you cut it down just to the 2-round thing. It's kind of representative of the season itself, right? You know, make everything a little smaller. Make the best of what you got. Everybody, you can't get together in one place, so you're shooting in everybody's respective living rooms. You preassemble the whole thing, so we don't have to worry about anybody's Zoom dropping out, or you know, their dog running in the background and knocking some stuff over, or you know, somebody accidentally picking somebody who already got picked, or anything like that. They keep a clean format. They got to do the prepackaged stuff, you know, show what Grant Ament was up to, you know, prior to his being drafted and all that stuff, because they could kind of take advantage of the situation, you know, put together something for the fans to watch. So, you know, like I said, you kind of make do with what you had. The thing that stuck out to me was the chaos, you know, now that they traded Gaudette for a future pick and they drafted Jeff Teats back to school and they don't retain that pick, they officially just leave with nothing. They didn't even have to show up for the draft. And, you know, 2 rounds, so it's not the biggest deal in the world, but it's just wild to show up and leave with nothing. So that's funny to me.
Yeah, and I've heard, like, you know, the inside kind of part of that was that, like, Towers was telling people, like, you know, we don't need a ton of stuff. We're just going to try and pick the best guy available. And, like, I'm like, yo, you do, though. Every team can get better. Like, yeah. This wasn't – what was the talent in this draft? I'm not going to say bad, but, like, it was certainly compromised by the uncertainty surrounding it, right? Like,
yeah.
That's fair. That's fair, right?
Very fair.
Yeah. So if that's where you're coming from with your draft, take a swing. But also, like, if you miss, like, you have to deal with the repercussions of missing. And I'm not saying like he's not doing that. Of course he is. Like, I'm sure he's gotten heat from his own players that are like, yo, we got nothing left. We didn't get anything out of the draft. Like, it's probably more of a jovial thing than even I'm making it out to be. But, facts are facts. But if we're talking about things that are funny, the funniest thing was watching the deletion of every Michael Krause mention on social media, because that is top tier petty. And I loved it. I really, truly loved it. And if you missed this, just go back and look at the Premier League Lacrosse's Twitter timeline. Just go back and look, and then go look at their Instagram and like look through and be like, there's like a pick missing. It's Michael Krause, unfortunately. Signed with the MLL. Like, that was, it was going to happen. Listen, another player that signed with the MLL was drafted and they had to re-pick it in the draft. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm not going to tell you who it was or who got redrafted, even though I know both. But there was another player that was picked that signed with the MLL like the day they held the draft, and they had to reshoot that segment, which is fine. Like, listen, that happens. Like, that's part of life when you have competition. And again, I think you and I have both said this. Competition is good. Competition is good for everyone. I think there's a little bit of thin skin going on, and like, listen, I'm familiar with thin skin. I've had my day lashing out. I'm out of that game now. I'm kind of just here, and this is what's going to happen, and you're going to have to deal with it, is my mindset. But I've been there, and I know what it's like to have like people just say negative things about you because they want to. And the sad reality of that is that's Twitter. That's not a focus group. It's Twitter. Like, you're just going to have to deal with the negative and deal with it. In my opinion, both leagues, a little better. You're pretty poor at dealing with it. I'm gonna be honest. Man, I missed this podcast. This is fun. Okay. Fun times. All right. Next topic, PLL group play announcement happened this week. In your opinion, which team has the, I don't want to say easiest, let's say best schedule?
So my schedule, I'm gonna say I liked the Redwoods schedule, the way that they planned that out. It wasn't my favorite announcement. I gotta say, I thought some of the other teams had the best announcements. But as
Oh,
far as
that's
the
true.
schedule, what's that?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. They could have brought some heat there. But as far as a good schedule, I really liked their schedule. They missed the Archers in the first stage, and I think that's great. You can let somebody else kind of figure that out, let somebody else deal with that. See what their attack is going to kind of bring to the table, how they're going to run their sets. Because I mean, you've got Holman and Manny back, but you've got Grant Amon down there, and are they going to look like they're clicking? Are they going to be running some sort of crazy sets? Who knows? Why not let somebody else, work on some sort of solutions? And then if you happen to see them later in the elimination stages, then you've already got some film on them. They take on Atlas, Chaos, and Chrome. You got Atlas and Chrome who were, missed the postseason last year. We'll see what they do this year. But if you got two guys there, then that's pretty decent. You can't ask for too much more than that. And they do see the Whipsnakes again. Obviously, that's not easy, but it is good, I think, to get them kind of in a rematch before you have the real stakes. What if the Redwoods come out a little jumpy? If they've got, last year's championship on their mind, maybe want to go for some bigger swings early on, they can kind of get those sort of shakes out of their system before it counts the most.
Yeah, I think this answer might surprise you. I think it's the Water Dogs. No Redwoods and no Whips on the docket is huge. Yes, they have to play the Archers, but they also get the Chaos, the Chrome, and the Atlas. And depending on when they play those teams and what shape those rosters are in, because we don't even know final rosters at the time we're recording this. We pretty much know, but nothing is set in stone. I think we can see like an immediate contender from an expansion team, which hasn't happened since the 2013 Charlotte Hounds. And that I think was like the, was that their debut or second season? But that was early in their, creation, either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually really like the Water Dogs roster with the exception of two things, and that's close defending, which I already talked about a little bit, and goalkeeping. I think they have too little of the former and too much of the latter all of a sudden. They've got like five goalies listed. And like when we did our roster predictions, I put Tate Boyce on there above DeLuca, and I didn't hear a lot of people complaining about it. So, and that's because I think Tate Boyce is good, and I think his pro experience really helps him. And I think that Copeland is going to go with Sip no matter what. Like he's on that team. He's gonna play. He's got the most experience. Like until he plays himself out, he'll be in there. But I think in the tournament format, you gotta have a guy who's like got a change of pace and also like has experience. Like I think it's really the hardest position to come in and play in the pros is goalie. It's not. I don't think it's close. It's really not close, right?
No, yeah, I definitely think it's goalie. Everybody's
Yeah,
a threat
so
from all over the field.
yeah, no, you're not getting any gumballs, you know, unless like the guy's already getting checked to the ground and he just like kind of tosses you one. Like that's not happening at the next level. So yeah, I think I, you know, and kind of rolling into that, you know, we're going into a tournament a couple weeks. Which of these seven teams has the best roster on paper, like, and that means kind of like what we think they're going to go into that tournament with right this second, especially now that the waivers and stuff happen. Which team do you think has the best roster?
So I have to say, and I'm surprised that this is what I actually came up with when I was, evaluating these rosters, because I could have sworn they're going to be way more decimated than this. But I'm still going to say the Whipsnakes. I'm going to say the Champs are still rolling out the best roster. They did take some serious hits, of course. They lose Kelly, they lose Reeves, Drew Snyder, all sorts of guys like that. But they managed to retain the entire defense and their goalie, which is huge to kind of have that already solved. You don't have to worry about it. You still got Shannon Chuk dropping bombs from the midfield, and he's a unique threat just in the league.
He had
So,
more two pointers than like other entire teams had two pointers. Multiple
right.
teams. 10. Multiple teams didn't get past like six.
Yeah. So anytime you can keep him on the roster, that's ideal. They've still got Michael Earhart, who has been, between last season and the World Games, has, just been entirely dominant at his position. So you got to feel okay coming off with all of those guys from that side of the ball. Plus, you got the guys like, Ty Warner, and you got Bernhardt, who are going to do some of the transition games. But I think we've seen Bernhardt lean heavy offense as well. Some of his previous work, I think when he was playing with Ohio back in the MLL days, there were some times where he was like, okay, I'm going to have to play some strict offensive midfield. So he's entirely capable of that sort of thing. I think the big question mark is what Zed Williams brings to the table, or more so how Jim Stagnita incorporates what Zed Williams brings to the table and kind of mixes it in with Matt Rambo's game. If they can work together, that could be really impressive. If not, it could be a total disaster. So it's a bit of a dice roll there, but they're both very capable players with some success this past season. Both of them were, very dangerous in their respective leagues. So if that goes well, if it doesn't go terribly, I think the Whipsnakes could be in great shape.
Yeah, and like don't underestimate their off-ball guys on attack either. You know, they got Jay Carlson, they got Maltz. Like these are guys that can catch and finish anything. They love setting picks and they make their money on the interior. So if you're going to double Rambo, you're going to double Zed, or you're trying to like push out on Zed quickly, like he will hit the crease really well. Some would say too often last season for the Cannons. But the Cannons also did not have an interior player like Carlson or Maltz. So I think that's going to be definitely something to watch. And I agree with you for the most part, but I do think they lost a ton of talent from that championship team. So I'm going to go with the Redwoods. And it's for one reason. There is no way that midfield can play worse than they did last year. There's just no way. It's too much size, too much speed, too much talent. And listen, aside from Walters, pretty much everyone had their worst season as pros. They know, all of them. That is not going to happen again. And they added depth to the faceoff X. Obviously, Greenling was out, but he was hit with injuries a lot. And I think Paskalgin is wildly underrated and at the very least has enough experience to tie guys up anytime it needs to be done. And Peyton Smith was the best faceoff guy available in the draft. And they added him, and I think they're taking them both. I don't see how you don't. You have to. If you're the Redwoods, faceoffs aren't the reason you lost games, but by and large, you did lose games because you didn't have enough possessions, and winning faceoffs gets you possessions. So you could, causation is not correlation, but, or correlation is not causation, but either way, it's an improvement to just have depth at that position. Finn Sullivan, a guy they added from the MLO entry draft, is almost a like-for-like replacement for Landis, except he's a little more like vanilla in terms of his overall game, but I think that's good. You don't have to be super exciting. You have to be super consistent. And Sullivan's only real weakness is guarding super fast guys, which I don't think he's gonna have to do because he's gonna be the number three pole, right? Honestly, look at the attack. Does any other team have three Dodgers that can also create their own shots? Maybe the Water Dogs, if Kelly plays the attack, maybe
Who
Reeves,
knows?
maybe. I just don't think anyone's at the level of Henningberg, Kavanaugh, or Guernsey. I just don't like that triad coming right at you is scary because they also can all catch and finish and give each other space and learn to work with each other really well. One of the reasons they didn't win the championship was they had to run Henningberg out of the box, and we don't know if to this day we don't know if he was injured or what. We didn't really ever get the full story on that, but if he was starting an attack, I think the Redwoods would have won. That's just, backseat driving, kind of hindsight being 2020, but at the same time, I think you could make a really good case for that. I think if they can stay injury free for the tournament, you just can't game plan for those three guys all at the same time. And the other thing, they have a really good coach who has the trust of his team, which, Chris and I have been doing this for a long time. That's one of the most important things that isn't even written about by us, because we don't think people care about that, but we know it matters to the players and it actually matters on the field eventually. Right? Don't you think that's kind of like something that maybe we're not talking enough about?
Yeah, you hear so often in the pro lacrosse world, either during a season if things aren't going well, or after a season when things have fallen apart and you're like, man, what happened? What's going on over there? It almost always somebody's like, yeah, we could not stand the coach, or yeah, we stopped listening to him, or he didn't know what he was doing, or he was being a jerk for no reason. There's always a coach story. If the team has flamed out and you expected them to be, at least decent, I would say if it's an underperforming team, there's always a coach story.
And there's a lot of coach killers in the league too. So make of that what you will. I had to take the heat on that one because I think you kind of maybe shared a little bit too much. I'm gonna take the heat on that one for you.
I mean, hey, listen, if people want to connect the dots, that's a fun activity to participate in as well. I'm just saying, sometimes it happens.
Yeah, we got we're selling activity books on the our sponsor of the podcast. The post waiver wire fallout. What did you make of it?
So I mean, I didn't as many names as we saw kind of get dropped off. And when they finally had to do their sort of announcements as far as who was going to participate and who wasn't, there weren't too many names that shocked me. It seemed largely like things we could have seen coming. Some people like for example, Kevin Rice, and we saw him last season had a very bumpy start and was out of the lineup. Plus, he's a guy who has a lot of stuff going on outside. You didn't anticipate him showing up for any team. Taking 3 weeks away from his, off-field stuff. And so I wasn't surprised to see somebody like him drop to the player pool. Same for guys like, Jerry Ragnes and Jody Marasco. Seen them there. I wasn't assuming they'd be there. If they were, it wouldn't surprise me, especially because they do have the experience and, contributing to the team. Joel White, I was not 1,000% surprised to see he wasn't there, because I know he's had some work conflicts before in his indoor season. So again, this whole 3 week thing is not what anybody signed up for, So you can't, if, as a fan, you definitely can't get mad if people are like, yeah, I can't swing that, you know, and that's not even counting, you know, maybe they have just other things going on that they need to take care of, you know, it's a crazy time for everybody. So those didn't really surprise me too much, but I guess the Joel White one is one that stuck out the most to me as being a serious impact that he's not going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, here's my hot take on the Chrome. I think they're better for it. Aside from White. I really do. That team lost some games, not all of them, but they lost some games because they played tired. And I'm going to say it, they played old. There were teams that were actually older in the league by average age, but in terms of how the Chrome played, it was old man lacrosse. Pass out of pressure, watch a Dodger go. If he's not on your side, sit on the wing, wait for the ball to cycle back. And if it doesn't get back to you, you run to the box. You cannot play that way in the PLL. And also, Jesse King's really good. Jake Pulver is also really good. Ela Salama is a freakish athlete that can run for an entire game. Like, people are not going to be prepared for him. He's too fast. Like, he's very fast. Duggan, or Dugan, I'm not sure which one it is, led Cornell in ground balls. And was second in caused turnovers in the little bit that they played of 2020. You know, Hunter Forbes got snubbed for every award ever because he played at the Fish School. Like, it's an all-time, all underrated team addition. You know, listen, I interviewed Sudo this week. Sudo is rubbing his hands together and getting ready to throw his head back and laugh like a bad guy in an action movie because he's thrilled with the roster he has. And I don't think he was when he took the job. And I don't think, you know, when he said he wanted to coach that team, because he had a choice, you know, like they had three openings when he was contacted. He could have coached the Water Dogs or the Atlas. But I mean, we all knew he was only going to choose the Chrome because of his history with all the players on the team from coaching them in Rochester. And he's going to get the best out of those guys. And they are not going to be a pushover. And you know, he hasn't coached Gutterding yet, and Sudo is going to make Gutterding better, which is scary because Gutterding was really good last year. Any other thoughts on some of the other guys that got picked up or dropped?
Well, I mean, I definitely agree with what you're saying about Hunter Forbes. He's one of those guys who kind of, and you'll see this a lot when you're paying attention, he's one of those people who fell into like a perfect situation for him, you know? He's not going to have all the pressure on him. He can come in and spell at face-offs from time to time, or if need be, you know, if you know, it's a hot hand situation, it's not all going to be on him. Plus, he's got Galloway there who he's played for, so kind of, you know, show him what the pro game's about, show him around the locker room. Get them all introduced, acclimated. He won't be too worried. It's a great spot for him. As far as non-Chrome people, I was especially interested to see this was kind of after they announced all the moves dropping these guys and those guys. Atlas picked up Jeremy Thompson. I'm interested to see if anything comes from that because I believe he played four games last year for Chaos, and then he's kind of out of their rotation. So I feel like this year is kind of our chance to see like if was that a roster depth problem or is it a performance problem? You know, and I think we'll get a much better chance of figuring that out this summer. And same goes with Romar Dennis, you know, his new teammate. You know, they're kind of, it looks like they're rolling out kind of a new look midfield over there for the Atlas. And Dennis is in a similar situation as Thompson was last year. You know, you just look at the name, you probably assume a much more productive summer than we saw in 2019. But I can't imagine either of them were at all satisfied with their performance. So, you know, we'll see what either of them can do this upcoming season.
I think Romar is the perfect example of a player that all the players love and think is like amazing. But like when it comes to, you know, media and analysts like you and I, we're like, whoa, his shot percentage is like way too low. Like, and he doesn't have a lot of goals. Like, I don't understand what you see. And I'm happy to be proven wrong. Listen, like, he shoots so hard. Like, it's not even like there's a difference between hard and fast. He just shoots hard. And if he just dials it in, like takes 10 miles an hour off the ball, like I'm sure like everybody has like kind of said that, like watching him play. But what if he does it? You know? I don't know. I think, you know, in that midfield, especially, it looks like Busick is playing. So, and Rabel's playing. Like, you're drawing, he's drawing like the third guy. Like, and he's got Rob Pennell feeding him over the top balls. Like, he's going to get an opportunity again. And I hope he makes the most of it. I really do. Like, and nobody wants him to dial in and hit more than like one or two two-pointers a year than I do. Like, I love shooters, but I'm also realistic about shooters and what they do for teams. Who is one player that no one is talking about that one of us thinks is absolutely going to blow up in this tournament? Because it happened last year with a bunch of guys like Connor Farrell. I think a lot of people didn't know who Eric Law was, and Eric Law was one of the best attackmen in the world last summer. So, you know, the guys like that, guys that absolutely blow up, who do you think that's going to be?
My nominee right now for guy who is absolutely going to blow up and people are going to, you know, start talking about him is Jake Withers, new water dog, got picked up by them. I just think, so basically in the indoor game, he has been absolutely destroying everybody. He finished last season with, I think, 78.1%. And that's insane. 78.1. And obviously there's some difference. You know, you've seen some people thrive indoors who don't do as great outdoors and vice versa. But I think now, more so than in the past, there's been a pretty significant overlap. Like, he was number one and Trevor Baptiste was number two, you know, so as far as the indoor game goes. So I think the styles are kind of meshing a lot better now than previously, as far as an indoor style versus an outdoor style. So, I mean, if he comes into this sort of situation and just kind of starts running the table, and he has done very well against Baptiste. And so, you know, it's not like he got all of those wins against the other guys and then he got shut down. You know, he's gone against the best and he has done very well. So I think the big question is how much faceoff success is going to matter. You know, like if you can win 60%, but your team is still getting blown out, you know, 14-5 or something like that, then it's not really going to do you any good. You know, the quick play and the shot clock and everything like that, if it is going to matter or not. But if it does matter and a team like the Water Dogs can capitalize on some added possessions, I mean, he could be a real reason that they turn some heads in this tournament.
Yo, we sound like Water Dog fans of this podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, is it possible to get, like, where is the stock in Water Dogs right now? Can you buy low on them? Is it still an opportunity?
I don't know, man. After this podcast, you're not going to be able to buy low on anything they're doing.
Yeah.
I think we did too much. We did too much. We should walk it back. But we're not going to, because we don't walk stuff back. No. For me, I think it's TJ Camizio. I feel like no one knows who he is. No one knows what he can do. And he is going to make a lot of Whipsnakes fans and teammates happy. He is, in a word, scrappy. He's the scrappiest player in the PLL, and he hasn't played a game yet. He is the scrappiest. It's like between him and P-Harb. We'll call it a tie, but Camizio is scrappy, dude. Like, if you need a GB and there's a scrum and someone's got to kind of weasel their way in and kick the ball out to themselves and pick it up and then fling a three-quarter pass across the field and then cut and then catch and score, it's TJ Camizio. That's like his signature play. He's so good up and down the boxes, in between the lines. Like, he is more than a short stick demon. He's a true transition player, and there aren't that many of them in the world that are as good as him. And you're going to see it in the first couple games. And he's already going to play with Ty Warner and Jake Bernhardt. He's going to free Jake Bernhardt to, like, not bother with defense. I really think they're just going to, like, run Bernhardt out on a midfield line for offense. I mean, the machine did it. It worked for them. They won a championship when they did that. Like, it's not the worst thing to ever happen. And the fact that, who cares if all three of those guys get stuck on defense? Nobody. That's, like, what you want. You don't even need a pole. And you already have the best defense behind them. Or top two, depending on who you subscribe to. Yeah, I don't know. I think that is going to do it for this segment. But we have one more segment left. And we're bringing it back. Because we always bring it back. And that is the recommendation of the week. Chris, what is your recommendation of the week for the people listening to this podcast?
So, my recommendation of the week is something that many of you probably have already participated in, but judging by their ratings, I'm guessing a lot of you did not, and that is checking out Community, available on Netflix. I did not watch it when it originally ran. I just kept hearing about clever things that were being done in each and every episode of it. So now I'm in the midst of catching up and actually watching all of Community. And I do not regret it. It's very smart. A lot of self-referential stuff. Dan Harmon does Rick and Morty now. His style is kind of to just sort of acknowledge that everybody is a TV character and they seem to be well aware that they're in TV shows. That's kind of like his personal style. So they kind of have a lot of winks and nods to, pop culture and just kind of TV tropes and things like that. Good show. I don't know if they could make it now. It's they've got
No.
I don't
No.
know. See, here's my thing though. I kind of wonder if there's going to be kind of an overcorrection where someone comes along and they're kind of like the anti-PC show. I think it always leans back into that eventually. So if not right this second, maybe in like 2 years they could make something like this again and people kind of poke fun at people for being very uptight about stuff. But so you might get shocked from time to time, but it's all in all a good show.
It's a good pick. It's a great pick, actually. I did not watch the last couple seasons of that, so maybe I'll check that out. But there are some all-timers in there. All-timers. And also, it's technically the origin story for the guys who did Infinity War and Endgame. Got their start with Community, or one of their starts. One of their first things they worked on was Community. So, if you liked those movies, you'll like Community. I don't know if that's true, but maybe you will. My recommendation's a little weird, because we like to go weird sometimes. But it's actually weird in a way that's great. Like, have you ever consumed some sort of media that like everyone's like, oh my God, this is my favorite thing. It's so good. You have to see it. And you're like, yeah, whatever. It doesn't look that good. And then eventually, like, you have it and you have nothing else to do. And you actually consume the media and you're like, they were right. I'm going to give you that thing for me right now. That very rarely happens because also I consume too much media, if anything. And the type of media is also going to turn some people off, but I'm going to guarantee you that you're going to like it. It's a mature rated thing. So definitely don't like take this as a recommendation if you're like a kid or whatever. Sorry, like you're not ready for this. It's probably like a ages 16, 17, 18 and up kind of thing. It's a graphic novel series called Saga. Have you heard of this?
I have not.
Okay. So it is by Brian K. Vaughan, who was a writer on Lost. He wrote a lot of comics. He created The Runaways, which is a show on Hulu for Marvel that isn't very good, but his comic run was very good. Why the Last Man as well. It's a really good writer. And he teamed with an artist, Fiona Staples, and they created this story. The pitch for this. They wanted to create something that you could only do in a graphic novel or a comic. Like this, it defies being filmed, right? You could never film this. It could never be turned into a TV show. And I can't tell you why, but it would be, first of all, the reason is it would be too expensive. But also like the effects that would be needed, all of that stuff. It's basically kind of a cosmic odyssey of these two people from warring factions in like a war between a moon and a planet. One of the people is very, this sounds way nerdier than it actually is when I describe it. One of the people is very magical in nature, and the other one is very technological. And that's really, not what their war is based on, but kind of like why their people are so different. But the thing about this is that it's this space like romance opera thing, and it's about them getting together and having a kid. And what that does to the politics of the war, their lives, their parents, and other races around the entire galaxy. And it is not what you expect at all. it was pushed to me by everyone I knew that read anything close to a comic as like the best thing ever. And I've only read 4 volumes. I think there's like 10. To 4 volumes, after I finished each one, I was hooked. I like ran to the other room to pull it off my bookshelf to read the next one. That's how good it is. It is so good. You can buy it on Amazon in like a full, you can, I mean, get it digitally because it's cheaper, but it's actually available in a collected edition that's like 4 or 5 inches thick. It's like War and Peace, but it's a comic. And it's like $44 on Amazon right now. It's called Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. It's so good and so weird and so satisfying. But that's going to do it. It's going to do it for our comeback, the comeback tour, the comeback for everybody, hopefully the comeback for lacrosse. Thanks for listening to the Inside the Cross Pro Lacrosse Podcast, PLL edition. Chris, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at ChrisRosie22 on Twitter and at Chris Rosenthal on Instagram.
And you can find me at TheKyleDevitt on Twitter and Instagram. We hope to be doing more and more of these as the tournament or tournaments get closer and closer. So make sure you're subscribed to the Inside the Cross Podcast feed. Tell a friend. And don't be shy about telling our bosses, Terry Foy and Matt Kinnear, that you want this back in your life. Because you are the only reason we're back, and we love you for it. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.